Hello, this is Mike Harbath in another Shoot the Moon podcast here at Revenue Rocket. I'm recording from my home office in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Today, I'm going to introduce Ryan Barnett. Ryan is an esteemed partner here at Revenue Rocket and VP of Growth. Ryan comes with many years of experience in market strategy, market sizing, M&A, pipeline development, and all-around experiences in the IT services market. Ryan, today we're going to talk about what we're seeing in M&A trends as we move into the end of 2020.
Hey, Mike. Nice to talk to you again on this, and thanks for having us on the podcast. It's been great to hear the strategies that you've been recommending and where the market's been going. So, I really wanted to talk about a few things today, and just wanted to get your opinion. And really, when we look at this market in a kind of pre-COVID, during COVID, and perhaps even post-COVID mode, can you tell me a little bit about what happened with the deals that you saw during COVID when March came around and things started to happen? What happened to the deal flow? And just get your perspective on that.
Well, it was interesting because I think what happened, we noticed immediately about the middle of March was everyone was trying to figure out what was going to happen. And for those deals that were under letter of intent with sellers that were dramatically impacted by COVID, and there were certainly some that we had where, you know, in one case, a company lost about 50% of its revenue or received notice that about 50% of its revenue was going to go away. Others had some slowness, although not nearly as impactful. But many of those deals got retraded. And when we say retraded, we mean that the terms of the deals changed. The value didn't change, but the terms of the deal changed. You know, in one case, it went from kind of a half cash, half stock deal to an all stock deal. And, so there were some things that did get retraded. Now, I'm happy to report sort of in the rearview mirror that those retrades were all successful in getting done, and that we were able to move forward with those transactions. As it relates to sort of new deals and pipeline development in general, initially we did see some slowing down, but that slowness only lasted a matter of weeks to maybe a month, and then people started answering their phones. And as a matter of fact, we almost saw more accessibility in late April and May, because people were at home and available, and we were able to get through the call screeners and get to their phones directly. And that worked out pretty well until everybody's mailbox got full, and then we went through a period of time when people's voicemails were full. We just an amazing number of people had full voicemails, and fortunately that all flushed out in June. So we have seen sort of interesting dynamics over the last, 90 days or so.
Sure. So it sounds like deals are still getting done, but not perhaps at where they had started out. Do you think that retrading may happen even through summer or fall, or was this a temporary blip in time?
Well, what's interesting is I don't think the retrading is going to continue predominantly because most of the companies, fortunately, in the IT services universe have not had huge impact to their businesses. They had some, some saw, on average, I'd say there was a, 20% retraction in the heart of COVID, but, or deals that got delayed, or new project starts got delayed. But I think all that is predominantly back now. And certainly buyer confidence has been buoyed as those end customers have come back. We've seen a tremendous number of buyers coming into the market. And I think this leads and drives to the heart of your question. A lot of people believe that there's going to be a negative impact to valuations this year. And we don't necessarily think there'll be a negative impact to valuation multiples. Certainly there'll be a negative impact to those companies that underperform, like there always would be. It wouldn't matter whether we had COVID-19 or not. But if they're, you know, underperforming or they're you know, have less profit, certainly there's going to be a level of impact to their valuation. But that's no different than any other time. We think because of the large number of buyers coming in, you know, that the valuation models and approach to deals is going to be, if we fast forward to, you know, Q4 of 2020, it's going to be really right where it was in Q3 of 2019. We certainly, I don't think we'll see any long-term negative impact to valuations.
Sure. It really seemed in March that we were talking to buyers that had really strong balance sheets, and they got really excited about going and do a deal. Like almost, I could sense blood in the water, and we're going to see valuations drop. And you really saw it, for example, in the security, cybersecurity world, in which public company valuations just really, really went from meteoric to maybe atmospheric. And since then, I think we've seen them come back up. But those same buyers that had the strong balance sheets that wanted to do acquisitions so quickly also seemed to slam on the brakes when it came to June and July. You know, why do you think companies came so hard at first, but slowed down so hard when it came to perhaps actually writing a check or engaging in more discussions for acquisitions?
Well, certainly there was a lot of uncertainty, right? And I think uncertainty, no matter what, isn't your friend in business, and it particularly isn't in a services business where you rely on selling time or subscriptions of service that is, you know, managed by people. Well, suddenly you got to change your work models to be a work anywhere model. That certainly impacted a lot of businesses and changed up just how they operate. Now, in technology businesses, fortunately, we've been pretty far ahead in those models for many years and have evangelized the use of infrastructure in ways that, you know, some companies and in industries that aren't necessarily as advanced technologically haven't. But I think the uncertainty really was what was behind the slowdown or people, you know, taking their foot off the gas. We certainly have seen that come back with a vengeance, but it was just trying to get a feel for, you know, how bad was it going to be, right? Were some of these companies going to lose, you know, a high percentage of revenue, or were clients going to cancel contracts, or, you know, certainly we did not see that. We did see some of that, but for the most part and almost universally, we've heard that, you know, that is passed now, and that there's a lot of pipeline velocity and new customer contracts getting written in all sectors of IT services.
True. And now, do you think a seller should be holding off in this market if buyers are sensing that perhaps valuations could be lower? What advice would you give to a seller right now, as far as running their business, as far as considering offers on the table? How would you coach a potential seller through this market?
Well, I would say that, you know, a lot of this increase in buy side interest was because of this, you know, smelling blood in the water, thinking that valuations will go down. Certainly for those firms that were highly exposed to, you know, affected industries, dramatically affected industries like, you know, retail or, you know, hospitality and you know, restaurants or travel, you know, those guys are going to take it on the chin. Now, I think those markets are going to come back slowly. And so, you know, if you're a seller that had high exposure to those markets, you're probably better off waiting, fortifying your business, increasing profits to the levels that they were at or beyond before you would go to market. Now, if you're not dramatically exposed to those markets and you haven't taken a significant hit in your revenue and results in profit, and quite a few IT services companies, as a matter of fact, have actually seen a increase in business through this period, because companies needed to kind of rethink how they did their work. And, you know, it's created a big opportunity, I think, for many of our clients. You know, certainly the fundamentals are what drive value. And, you know, if you have strong growth and strong profit and you're contemplating an exit, then, you know, I'd say now is as good a time as any. And we certainly don't see a shortage of buyers. And by all, for all intents and purposes, companies that are performing well should be able to, you know, get the same valuation they did pre-COVID. And some would argue that as time goes on, those valuations will actually go up even more due to the number of buyers that are actively in the market now.
Sure, that increased competition could certainly make it more enticing for sellers to offer multiple bids if it's available. And thinking about valuations in this time of COVID, we have the PPP plans, and a number of small businesses took those PPP loans. Do you have any sense of how those loans may actually factor into an acquisition? How a buyer might evaluate a company that took a PPP loan? How that looks at the profitability, and does it change the structure of a deal at all? And so it's a really a program that we haven't seen in the past and has some unique characteristics to it. Love to get your take on the impact of PPP loans and valuations and selling a business in this time.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question because it certainly provided a scenario where the potential exists to extract more money from a transaction once a PPP loan has been forgiven than before, particularly if a company did not need or had a very minimal impact in using the PPP funds. And what I mean by that is there's certainly been plenty of IT services companies that have received PPP loans, many of our clients and others, that didn't really need to use them. And I would tell you that, you know, they took those loans because they don't, you know, none of us can predict the future. We don't know if there's going to be additional strain that's put on their business in the future because of COVID. But as of this time, you know, the week of the 15th of June, 2020, we see a lot of them just sitting on that cash. Now, generally, when a transaction gets done, you know, a seller needs to settle that debt, right? And right now, it's a sort of has a neutral position because most folks that have gotten PPP loans, or the vast majority of them at this point, have not applied for their forgiveness of those loans. But as they do, they will have a dramatic positive impact on their balance sheet. And so when you think about valuation and you think about, you know, transaction metrics, today it won't have an impact because you're showing on the balance sheet, you know, a liability for the loan. And, you know, if the lion's share of that cash is still in the business, you're seeing that cash offset that liability, and it has a net neutral or close to neutral approach on the balance sheet. But as soon as that loan is forgiven, it's going to plus up the asset side of the ledger by that amount. And because it's liquid, it's going to have a very positive impact on working capital. Generally, that money should be able to be harvested by a seller in that situation because it's excess working capital. And we certainly would treat it that way whether we were representing a buyer or representing a seller, that, you know, this is working capital that is in excess of what's required to run the business. So I think it has the potential, interestingly enough, to create another avenue for you as a seller you know, harvest more from the transaction than you might be able to normally.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you believe buyers will evaluate that PPP loan differently? Again, this is unique to us. I don't expect we have a concrete answer yet, but I would imagine that there might be some scrutiny or some, do they treat it similar to an ad back, or that's going to be just a new financial tool at their disposal?
Well, I think it depends on the time, right? So, you know, there's always a negotiation that goes on around working capital. We think, you know, working capital ratios of one, where you have current assets covering current liabilities, is a fair way to transition a business. And there's times when there's more working capital that is required. So it's hard to just, you know, make a blanket statement about working capital being, you know, what we call value in excess above the working capital ratio of one, being able to be harvested by the seller. But generally, that is the case. Now, I'd say that many buyers want to get average working capital over the last 12 months to be left in the business. The challenge with that strategy or thinking is that usually that means that the buyer is asking for too much working capital, because most small businesses are overcapitalized on purpose, right, from a working capital perspective, so that the business owners don't necessarily have to be getting into their line of credit, or they don't have to be, you know, in and out of various financial vehicles. So, you know, there's always a discussion and negotiation about what is the right amount of working capital, and there's a couple ways to pursue that. But if the loan has not been forgiven, it'll be neutral to a transaction. A buyer certainly will see it as neutral, because if we assume that the cash wasn't used and the loan sitting out there, they're going to cancel each other out. But as soon as that loan is forgiven, that excess working capital will kind of be up for grabs. And I think, you know, I think buyers, of course, are going to want to try to get their hands on that. And certainly sellers are going to not want to let it go. So I think as a practical matter, if it's not needed and you can't show it as needed in the historical needs for working capital, then it should go to the seller.
Sure. That makes sense. And do you think with this new increase in number of buyers that we've seen, do you think there's going to be an equal number of sellers that come to the table over the next 2 quarters? We've got an election coming up. We've got perhaps even a second wave of COVID. Where do you think there will be a balance in the buyer and seller equation?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, there's certainly a lot of buyers coming in. There always has been an adequate number of sellers, in my opinion, because, you know, maybe I'm just a little bit jaded here, but, you know, every business is for sale at the right price, right? Everything's for sale. If you talk to most business owners, they say, sure, I'm not actively looking to sell my business, but if somebody comes in and offers me the right deal, it's of course for sale. So I think that, you know, there's other market dynamics that will drive people deciding to sell. And there's a couple that are pretty interesting. You know, one is just consolidation continues to happen, right? In highly competitive markets, you know, consolidation is occurring because there's just too many firms, there's too many competitors. And that's driving consolidation. You know, eventually people either change their strategy to have fewer competitors by either how they approach the market or how they sell or how they go to market, or they've got to concede and be part of a bigger firm. It's just how it goes. So I think that consolidation will continue to sort of drive deals, if you will. I think beyond that, though, you also have an aging population of business owners. And many of those business owners are looking to retire, right? They've run these businesses for 20 or 30 years. It's their single largest asset. They're like, you know, with all this craziness going on with COVID and you know, the tensions we're having, you know, geopolitically, I need to spend more time, you know, pursuing their passion, whatever that might be, in retirement. And I think that'll drive more sellers to the market that ultimately want to retire. We've certainly seen that over the last few years in our own business. People that have come to us to say, hey, we want to retire and plan for retirement. And, you know, maybe we're good to go for another 3 or 4 years of working, but we'd like to be part of something bigger as we sort of off-ramp our work. And because of the record number of boomers that are retiring or going to be retiring soon, I think we're going to see a lot of sellers coming to the market, you know, for that reason alone. And, you know, not to mention folks that are just tired, right? We always talk to folks that sometimes come to market just because they can't seem to grow their business or they feel maxed out in their ability to grow it. And then they're open to doing a transaction, open to moving on. So that's that.
Well, great. Well, I appreciate all the insights here today, Mike, and thanks for letting me be part of the podcast today, and hope we can continue to have these dialogues in the future.
You bet. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate everybody's time today on our Shoot the Moon podcast, and look forward to talking to you again soon. So long.